Hi, I'm Tim Black, fifth grade teacher at Bridal Mile Elementary School in Portland, Oregon. Welcome to Be Milecast, our classroom podcast highlighting news from Room 6, along with stories, poems, interviews, and other items of interest brought to you by our fifth graders. Today, Rachel and Grace will begin with a book report on Danny, Champion of the World, a novel our fifth graders read earlier in the fall.
Has your dad ever made a fire balloon with you? How about a kite? Well, maybe he has, but has he ever taken you poaching? In Roald Dahl's book, Danny, the Champion of the World, Danny's dad lets Danny do all of this, plus driving a car, not going to school until he's 9, and lots of other things that normal kids don't usually do.
This book takes place in the mid-1900s in England. Danny and his dad live alone since Danny's mother died when he was only 4 months old. Danny and his dad live in a gypsy caravan behind their filling station, which Danny's dad let Danny out in. Danny's dad is what Danny calls a gentle giant. Danny also notices that his dad is an eye smiler, which means that he only shows emotion with his eyes. Danny loves living with his dad, and everything went smoothly until one day when he was 9 years old, Danny woke up to find that his dad was not in the caravan.
Danny's terrified. He looks everywhere for his dad. Eventually, Danny sits out on the front steps of the caravan to wait for his dad. He doesn't know how long he's out there, but after a while, he hears footsteps, and it's his dad. Danny's dad explains that he has been up in Hazel's Wood poaching pheasants. Poaching is when people go into another person's property and take animals, in this case, pheasants, from that area. Also, it's kind of illegal. Danny is surprised to hear that his dad is a poacher, but soon warms up to the idea when Danny's dad explains some of the methods, such as the horsehair stopper and the sticky hat.
As time passes, Danny gets more used to the idea of his dad poaching. Around this time, a new character, Mr. Victor Hazel, is introduced to the story. Mr. Hazel is a rude, piggy snob who is filthy rich. Every year, Mr. Hazel has a shooting party and invites all the other filthy rich lords and ladies and dukes and duchesses. They shoot pheasants and sip champagne and have a jolly good time. Actually, they don't have a jolly good time.
One night, Danny's dad has gone out poaching. Danny wakes up around 2 in the morning, and his dad still isn't back, even though he promised that he'd be back by 10 o'clock. So Danny takes a car, the baby Austin, down to Hazel's Wood. It took quite a while because Danny's only 9, and he isn't that tall, so he can't reach the gas pedal very well. When Danny finally gets to the woods, he searches for his dad until he finds him in a 12-foot-deep ditch that had been dug by the keepers to catch poachers. Danny helps his dad out with a coil of rope. It turns out that Danny's dad's ankle has been broken. They limp back to the baby Austin, and Danny drives them home. They call Doc Spencer, who takes Danny's dad to the hospital. Later, Danny's dad comes back with a cast on his leg, pain medications, and all that stuff.
When Danny's dad wakes up, he confesses to Danny that he'd love to catch all of Mr. Hazel's pheasants and ruin the shooting party. Danny comes up with the brilliant idea to put a teensy bit of sleeping pill powder in raisins. Pheasants love raisins. They'd be asleep in no time.
A few days later, they put their plan into action. Danny and his dad prepare all their raisins and then go out into the woods. Danny's dad is very courageous and throws out all the raisins when the keeper is standing only 5 yards away. The keeper leaves, then Danny and his father wait until the pheasants start falling from the trees like raindrops. Eventually, they pick them all up and end up having 120 pheasants. They have a taxicab waiting for them, driven by Danny's dad's old friend, Charlie Kinch.
The next day, they have Miss Clipstone try to deliver the pheasants. We say try because about halfway down the road, she begins to sprint. She looks ridiculous with a huge baby carriage filled with pheasants, covered with a sheep, and topped off with a screaming baby. All the pheasants fly out when she takes her baby out of the carriage. Guess who pulls up in his shiny silver Rolls Royce? It's Mr. Hazel! Mr. Hazel is quick to accuse Danny's dad of things that Mr. Hazel has no evidence against. Danny's dad replies in a calm manner that Mr. Hazel has no evidence, then calls him a blue-faced baboon.
After Mr. Hazel leaves, Doc Spencer, who is standing there the whole time, shows Danny, his dad, Sergeant Samways, and Miss Clipstone 6 pheasants that had eaten too many sleeping pills and would never wake up. He gives 2 pheasants to everybody, but doesn't take any himself.
In conclusion, this book is a delightful story in which the protagonist and antagonist are very strong. However, we wish that Mr. Hazel was a larger character, since he is such a funny antagonist.
Natalie says, "I think this is a good book, with some suspense in it. Also, it's kind of an odd book, because Danny finds out that his dad was a poacher, which was something that Danny didn't expect of his father."
Connor says, "I thought it was good. Some parts were a little boring, but it was interesting most of the time, I guess. The poaching was interesting, too." The author of this book, Roald Dahl, has written many other scrumdiddlyumptious books, such as Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which has been made into 2 different movies, The VFG, and James and the Giant Peach, which has also been made into a movie.
We recommend that you read more of Roald Dahl's books because he has a great sense of humor and he really understands kids.
Next up, we will hear from Connor and Spencer as they update us on some recent news in sports.
Our first story will be about college football.
The number 1 team, LSU, played the number 2 team, Alabama, and won, allowing them to keep the number 1 spot. The now number 4 Ducks played the Stanford Cardinals and won, allowing the Ducks to get back in the race for the BCS game. So far, the SEC is the best conference in college football, with 6 teams in the top 25.
Now going to the World Series. The St. Louis Cardinals take it all in Game 7 to be the World Series champions. The 7th game would not have been played if the Cardinals' third baseman, David Freese, hadn't hit a walk-off home run in the 6th game. David Freese plays third base and also won the MVP award.
The Duke coach, Coach K, has the most wins for a college basketball coach after beating Michigan State. He has coached some of the best players like Grant Hill and Shane Battier. He has also coached Nolan Smith, a player who the Blazers drafted.
The Seahawks, with 3 wins, have had a rough season with tough games coming up. They probably won't make the playoffs. That's all for now. See you next time on the CS News.
In Room 6, we have no shortage of great writers. Here are Natalie, Parker, Avery, and Griffin to share some of their recent literary talents.
Fishing with an eagle. Rise and shine, yelled my grandma as she walked into my room. My sister Zoe, Emma, and I were spending a week at my grandparents' house. They live in Olympia, Washington. We come to visit them every year. Today, we were going fishing. My sisters and I had never been fishing before, so we were excited. I got out of bed, brushed my teeth, got dressed, grabbed a piece of toast, and we were off to my grandpa's friend Steve's house. Steve was going to drive the boat. When we got there, Steve took us downstairs where he worked. There were stuffed bears everywhere. Then he took us outside to his boat. When we got into the middle of the lake, Steve started setting up the fishing lines. We waited for a while for the fish to bite, but nothing happened. Then, like magic, all 8 fishing lines had a bite. We reeled them in with no time to spare. After that, Steve told us about an eagle that lived in a large tree on the side of the lake. He hit one of our fish on the head with a hammer so it would be knocked out so it couldn't swim away. Then he threw it back into the lake. An eagle soared out of the tree, circled the sky, then swooped down to grab the fish. It was the most beautiful thing I ever saw. Finally, we went back to Steve's house and gutted the fish. It was gross. Then we bagged them and headed home. That night, we had a wonderful fish dinner.
Our Trip to Arkansas by Parker. It was the middle of summer, and my family and I were in Arkansas visiting our cousins. I woke up to find out we were going on a hike. My dad said Arkansas isn't very hilly, so it'll be easy. Before I knew it, we were there. My brothers and my 2 male cousins took the hard path. Everyone else took the easy path. Well, at first it was easy. It was just flat with no rocks. But the higher we got, the harder it was. 1 hour later, we were on hands and knees climbing upward on rocks. My lungs were gasping desperately for air. I had to keep climbing. When I had 3 miles to go and a cramp in my lung and a bruise on my leg, I slipped on a pebble and scraped my knee. I groaned in agony as blood trickled down my shin and wet my sock. I could see the top, and I knew at the top was a first aid booth. I kept climbing. My hand was on the top. I used all my strength, well, what was left of it, to pull myself up. Then there it was, the beautiful thing I've climbed all that way to see. The greenery was so beautiful, I could have stayed there forever and not see it at all. I figured all that climbing was worth it, more or less.
Summer Road Trip by Avery. Last year, my family and I went on a week road trip to California. My sister and I were stuck in the back seat of our van with no entertainment except a few books. The road trip lasted 6 to 10 hours. When I was nearly out of my mind with desperation, we got to our campsite. My family's campsite was by a rushing river with a rope swing leading to the frigid water. There was a circle of alder trees, and every day the green leaves sparkled in the sunlight. After a few nights, we left to our next destination, the Redwoods. The Redwoods are a giant forest of redwoods, sequoias, and other trees and shrubs. Redwoods look like the name. They have red bark, like the western red cedar, except they are much taller and you can't even see the tops. Sequoias are more wide than tall, and the biggest sequoias were about 30 feet around and 275 feet tall. These tall green trees I'll never forget. Sometime later, we are on the road trip again, but this time to Monterey. When we arrived, the first thing we did was go to the famous aquarium. There, we saw seahorses that looked like slimy seaweed, jellyfish, with their colors flashing in the light, penguins wallowing in the freezing water, touch tanks full of sticky anemones, bat rays roughened and wonderful, full to the touch. Sea otters, fuzzy like a dog that hasn't shed in a century. People drifting in and out of exhibits like the tide. And my favorite, sharks. The sharks were big, small, yellow, spotted, black, and white. The great whites, were gracefully swimming with the other sharks and tuna, the biggest I'd ever seen. That was the day, one of the many I'll never forget.
It was going to be a perfect day. It was sunny and cloudless, and my sister just learned how to ride her bike. I started riding my bike, too, to help her along the way. But then, when my sister turned around to start going the other way, I was headed straight for her, prone to a head-on collision. I slammed on my brakes, flipped over onto my handlebars, and fell off my bike. Now I'm laying in the middle of the road, wondering if I was dead yet. The next thing I know, I'm in the car being rushed to the emergency room. When I got there, a room was already open, and the doctor let us in. I laid on the bed in the middle of the room. The doctor asked, "Do you need any blankets?" I said, "Sure." And within 2 minutes, he brought 2 big fluffy blankets that just came out of the dryer. Then the doctor looked at my wound. He decided that I have to get stitches. He put the stuff that numbs the wound on. Finally, he began stitching my wound. I got to look at my wound while he was stitching it, and my mom took a photograph of it. All I could feel was a tugging sensation, but no pain at all. After that, he was done. Then we drove home. A few weeks later, the doctor told us to come back. We did. And he told me that I had to take a shower, wash my injury, and then put on my dad's bathrobe and let my wound air out. Finally, we went home. I did as the doctor told. Now I'm writing about this in the 5th grade, thinking about my first 8 stitches.
In fifth grade, students study early American history. Earlier in the year, we studied some of the Indian tribes of various regions throughout North and South America. Today, we will hear from Jolie as she discusses a few of these tribal groups of North America.
In History of Black class, we are learning about Native American tribes and what's special about them. There are many different tribes, but I only have time for four. The Hopi lived in adobe homes and are the descendants of the Anasazi. The Hopi call themselves Hopiti, which means the gentle people. The Hopi lived in what is now northeastern Arizona. Since it is always dry in Arizona, with only 20 inches of rain or less, the Hopi had their own special way of farming. It was called dry farming. Their main source of food was corn, and they planned to have a 2-year supply of it every winter. The Hopi also had kachina ceremonies. A kachina ceremony is where they have a doll called a kachina doll, only with the Hopi for half the year. The Hopi use their environment around them like the next tribe I will be talking about. The Navajo is the largest tribe in the western United States. A majority of the 200,000 Navajos live on America's largest reservation. The reservation is 28,000 acres and spreads throughout New Mexico, Arizona, and Utah. The Navajo speak Athapascan and call themselves the Dene. The Navajo lived in houses called wigwams. The Navajo made rugs, baskets, silver, and turquoise. The men did all of the silver work. So far, you can compare and contrast two different tribes. How about a third? The Haudenosaunee live in what is now Quebec and New York State. The Haudenosaunee are also called the Iroquois and spoke Iroquoian. The Haudenosaunee lived in a house called a longhouse. The Haudenosaunee invented a fine beadwork called wampum. The Haudenosaunee were made up of six nations: the Onondaga, the Mohawk, the Cayuga, the Seneca, the Oneida, and the Tuscarora. The six nations were all descendants of the Owasco, except the Tuscarora. The Owasco lived between the Hudson River and Lake Erie from 100 AD to 1300 AD. The Haudenosaunee have 13 different ceremonies each year. The two biggest ceremonies are called the Midwinter Renewal and the Grain Corn Harvest Ceremony. The Plains Indians invented the bow and arrow around 300 AD. They had to hunt buffalo on foot until the Spanish arrived with horses. This made hunting and life much easier for the Plains Indians. The Plains Indians use every part of the buffalo. They use the sinew for thread, the bladder for water containers, and the horns for cups and bowls. The Plains Indians were one of the many tribes that relied on farming. I thought it was very interesting to learn about Native Americans, and I hope you enjoyed learning about them, too.
Today's B-Milecast will conclude with three writers, Rachel, Nate, and Anna, sharing their sensational narratives.
Granzella. Mom, I groaned, are we there yet? Almost, sweetie, Mom called, glancing at the map. It should be up here on the left in about 5 minutes. It was July, and my family of five had packed ourselves and numerous pieces of luggage into our red van for a road trip. I just love being stuck in the car with my sisters for hours on end. Our final destination? San Fran, baby! After that, we'd head back up to Oregon. Home sweet home. But today, our destination was a hotel called Granzella Inn. That's an odd name, mused Kate. The oldest at 13, she was ever trying to be practical. Keyword, trying. I don't care what the name is, but this hotel better have a pool or I'll... Juliet trailed off, trying to think of something to do to the Granzella Inn. Juliet, 8 years old, was obsessed with swimming. I have no idea why. Here we are, girls, exclaimed Dad. All sure that's going ashore. We grabbed our bags and, once we checked in, clambered up the stairs. After arriving in our room, the clock confirmed that we had 30 minutes to swim. Changing quickly, we swam our hearts out. Around 7 o'clock, we headed to dinner at the Granzella Bakery. I ordered a chicken Caesar salad. After all, nobody can mess up a good salad, right? Well, apparently, some people can. After that horrible dinner, we wandered around the Granzella store, looking at Granzella pickles, made in Washington, Granzella huckleberries, picked in Maine, and, finally, Granzella t-shirts, made in China. Wow, so authentically Granzellian. Once my family and I meandered back to the hotel room, Mom left to go get ice. As we got ready for bed, Dad decided that we should say or do something when Mom came back. Soon, we had agreed on the Granzella chorus. Each of us were to sing Granzella once each, getting higher as we went along. Finally, all together, we'd say, Granzella! We all went back to what we were doing, and just in time, Mom walked in. Dad sat up, Granzella! Kate put down her book, Granzella! I rolled off my cot, Granzella! Julia stopped bouncing on her bed, Granzella! Dad, Kate, Julia, and I looked at Mom and said, Granzella! To make a long story short, we had a disgusting breakfast the next day, then left that crappy, pardon my French, franchise that was Granzella. Sure, it was a memorable experience, and yeah, it does make a funny tale. But you know what they say. Bad decisions, staying at Granzella, make good stories. The one I just told you. I just hope that I never go back to Granzella. This story has been brought to you by Granzella Inn, Bakery, and Store. Copyright 2011.
Last summer, I went back east to visit my cousins in Pennsylvania. So we flew the red eye into Pennsylvania and drove to their house. About 1 hour later, my uncle went online to try to find Philly tickets. He was successful, so we drove back into Philly and started to watch the game. The Phillies ended up winning 3-0. On the way back from the game, it took us 1 hour to get out of the parking lot, and it ended up taking 4 hours to get home due to traffic. When we got home, we all went to bed because we were so tired. That night, we got no sleep because of a huge thunderstorm that stuck over the house. So with the red-eye flight and the Phillies game and the thunderstorm, I got no sleep, which made me sick. That morning, we got up and drove to Gettysburg, which didn't work out for me. I ended up throwing up in the car. So we made a surprise stop at Valley Forge. But of course, I wasn't able to go inside. The rest of the drive went according to plan, and we arrived in Gettysburg. The rest of the day, my family went into the historic town of Gettysburg, and I had to stay at our hotel with my mom. It was a pretty boring day because all I did was watch some ESPN broadcast over and over again. The next morning, I woke up and went to a doctor that just happened to be right across the street from our hotel. I ended up having really bad strep throat. The doctor gave me medication, and I was able to enjoy the rest of the trip in Washington, D.C. in Rehoboth Beach.
Hawaii by Anna. We're here! We had just arrived at the Honolulu Airport in Hawaii. But this wasn't any ordinary airport. It's almost completely outside. My mom and I were so excited along with me. We got out all our stuff and took a quick stop at the hotel, then headed straight for the beach. When we got there, my feet sank into the sand. I'd been to many beaches before this, but this was the first time I realized how elegantly the waves flowed, how good the sand felt on my feet. Then I saw it. In the navy blue water swimming, not too far from land, was a bright green oval. At first I thought it was a big fish. Then I realized it was a sea turtle. Before you could say Nemo, I was in the water with my snorkel on and on the watch. Every time the turtle moved, I moved. I didn't know at the time that I was swimming as fast as I could after the sea turtle. All I was focused on was how the turtle barely moved its flippers, how it had been I'm getting ahead of myself. Anyway, I thought I was watching it from a distance, but I wasn't. The next thing I knew, I was taking a final look at the turtle. I could barely see the shore. I had swam so far out that I could see little blobs, which I guessed were people. When I squinted, I could make out a small stick figure waving their hands. It was a struggle to get back. I got scraped by coral, I couldn't stand, and I kept getting water up my nose. After a couple more hours, we headed back to the hotel. Hey, maybe we can go back there tomorrow.
Well, that's all this time for our B-Mile cast. Thanks for joining us, and please feel free to contact us at mrblacksclass@podomatic.com. On behalf of all of us here at B-Mile cast, this is Mr. Black wishing you all a great December and a very happy new year.
Noa o kohala, ahe koni koni lua ala I ka poli, e aloha no kala I ne o ka pā. Ke noho nei au me kuhua, kukupua roze lani o kohala.
Hello, 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 hello